present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with an item from the Bridgewater Mercury, read by Charlotte Green.
Pat Holland and Gail Sturdy of Oxford Street, Burnham-on-Sea, were married at St. Bridget's Church, Breen, which they followed with a honeymoon in Highbridge Snooker Hall.
Thanks to Alison Kennedy of Langport. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome, first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Linda Smith. Opposite them on my left, Francis Ween and Fred McCauley. And Jeremy, whose darling is still trying to say farewell to welfare.
Alistair Darling, he said without a comma. Alistair Darling, what a stupid name to have. Should change it to Ali Pet or something like that. But him with the very dark brows and very white hair, who is taking lots of money away from disabled people, but only for a very good reason, which is that so he can give it to disabled people who are even worse off. Because this is what they say, this is what the Tories always said. When they take money away from people, they say, well, we have to do this because we're targeting, because there are some people who are even more in need. It doesn't really always work like that. I mean, when we were bombing Belgrade, we didn't have to sort of stop bombing Iraq because they were less deserving. We did both at once, didn't we?
Mr. Darling has claimed the government's in an ideal position to understand all the needs of the disabled. It's deaf to arguments, blind to the merits of the case, and hasn't got a leg to stand on. 2 points to Jeremy. Linda, which minister made a right pig's ear of the beef talks?
Nick Brown. Would this be Nick Brown? He had to go out to Brussels and sort of eat what French cows are fed on, really, didn't he? Had to sort of backpedal a bit over this beef war. But the thing is, they say it'll all be over by Christmas, don't they, the beef war? And if it's not, there'll probably be a bit of a Christmas Day armistice, won't they, with the French farmers and the English ones meeting to play football on a Calais car park and sing boiled beef and carrots. And apparently now the farmers have just to prove how rational the farmers are being over this beef business, they're presenting Tony Blair with a bloody steaming ox heart with the messages, we're psychopaths, I suppose. Don't mess with us. Could be. So I don't know if this might be a whole new trend for Christmas. Say it with offal. I don't know. Turn up at your mum's with a lovely bunch of liver.
Well, I mean, he's done the only thing he could do, Nick Brown. He managed to pull a deal whereby the French come up looking fantastic and the English come up looking crap. The French are marvellous at this kind of thing. When the French were breaking into the lorries the other week and searching them, an English journalist were going up to the gendarmerie and saying, but don't you realise this is against the law? And then all the cops just had this look on their face like, oh, yeah, I really care about that. Oh, yeah. Scare me with your microphone, Englishman. Oh.
Yes, Agriculture Minister Nick Brown has made several unnecessary concessions to the French government over beef. The British capitulation was so extreme it was assumed that his negotiating team must have included the entire New Zealand All Blacks. Fred, which Pommy Sheila might be shoved off her Danny down under?
Pommy Sheila is Her Majesty the Queen, because the Aussies are deciding whether they want to be a republic or not. And like the rest of the world, they're just waiting to see what Rupert Murdoch says. And if they get rid of her, we might do the same in Scotland, because I'm told that there's a possibility that Princess Anne might be given a title in Scotland, Queen Anne, if she's got the legs for it.
So Murdoch went back to Australia to launch his Republican campaign. There was a wonderful headline in the Telegraph on Thursday, news story from Australia, saying, Murdoch newspaper accused of bias. In the dog bites man thing. So this is fairly low down, but it's very newsworthy. And he's come out against the hereditary principle, which is very sweet from a man whose son James runs his American operations and son Lachlan runs his Australian operations and daughter Elizabeth runs B Sky B. But as long as they don't tinker with it in his empire, he's very much against it.
Yes, Australia's head of state is still Elizabeth II. Or, if you're listening to the repeat, Australia's head of state is Bruce, who works part-time in a surf shop in Wagga Wagga. Australia is called by its inhabitants the Lucky Country, mainly because it's blessed with wonderful weather and because Rolf's Animal Hospital is only broadcast in the UK. 2 points to Fred. Francis, listen to this. Francis, how has the people's premier turned into the boss's friend?
Oh, I thought that working my way back stuff was going to be about Michael Portillo, but he's not the premier yet. There was a CBI conference. Is this all about Blair sucking up to the bosses?
Yes.
People who are pretty rich need incentives to go to work every day, so they just lie in bed. So they are going to be given these tax-free share options. And at the other end of the scale, you need an incentive to go and work, so you get your benefits cut off.
Would I be right in saying that the link from the music to the CBI conference is that the really deep voiced bit, the was Michael Portillo? Because he's working his way back, and they said that the CBI conference was nothing more than a stage, a platform for politicians and Michael Portillo, because he was there. And as we all know, he's not a politician yet. He's working his way back, though, and there will be some twitchy seats in the shadow cabinet. I'll warrant.
Portillo is trying to appeal to us, because he keeps saying, he says, I haven't had a homosexual experience for a very long time. And you think, well, all right, he's lost some of the old magic, but he's still quite... reading that women find him very attractive, and one of the reasons is he's very full lips, because he's got quite good lips, because men normally neglect their lips and don't, and his are sort of quite moist and pouty, because men most men don't use enough lip salve, but I think his lips have seen chapstick on quite regular occasions.
Before we start round two, here's a letter to parents from the editor of the Lancing College School magazine.
With regard to the Lent and Summer 99 edition of the magazine, please note that there's an error on page 13. The third line of the second column should read cross-country skiing and not seal clubbing in Greenland.
Thank you very much, Miranda Bailey from West Sussex. Jeremy, who believes Tony Blair should stop Lord of Lording it over the Cabinet?
Prescott. He said that Tony Blair thinks he's Jesus Christ, which is ridiculous. Tony Blair knows he's Jesus Christ. And he's capping their salaries at £200,000 a year, or whatever they are. And Prescott, being nouveau riche, wants some more gravel on that drive. And he wants to get some Coy Carp in there. Coy Carp. 20 grand a pop, Coy Carp. He's like a pools winner, isn't he? Transport supremo. He just treats the country like a series of rides that he goes on, doesn't he? If I go on the tube today, or I might go in the car. But, yeah, so he had a go at Blair. And this is all in someone's diaries, Lady Richard's diaries. Is that right?
Yes.
I'm 38.
He said that if Tony Blair wanted to behave like Jesus Christ and not take the pay rise... which, you know, I'm no great student of the Bible, but I didn't know that our Lord was salaried.
Actually, the best thing in the diaries, Lady Richard's diaries, was Lord Richard, her husband, was chairman of the trustees of Chequers, one of his duties while running the House of Lords, and he said that when Major was Prime Minister, there's a housekeeper there at Chequers who came into the drawing room one day while he was sitting there at 10 o'clock, and she just went up, turned the telly off. She said, it's 10 o'clock, it's time to lock up now, get out. And Major, pathetically, said, oh, all right.
Was he definitely in Chequers, not a National Trust tea room? Because they do chuck you out of there eventually.
Some of them do a lock-in, though. The Irish ones usually do a lock-in tea room. Late scones.
According to the memoirs of Janet Jones, wife of the former leader of the House of Lords, John Prescott accused Tony Blair of acting like Jesus Christ. Others have dismissed the claim as laughable, especially as Mr. Blair has refused to turn any more water into wine until Gordon Brown stops slapping duty straight on it. Fred, listen to this. Where you been lately? There's a new kid in town. Everybody loves him, don't they? Why is old auntie shaken up about her new broom?
Aye. Old auntie being the beeb. And I'm not sure, but I think there's some lesbian taking over. That's probably the end of my career. Greg Dyke took office, and there was a brilliant photo in one of the papers, in a few of the papers, of him all very tanned and smiley, and John Burt, who's on the way out, standing just a few paces behind, looking absolutely miserable, because Greg Dyke has just said, we're going to have a look at the complete structure of the BBC before we start to do anything. In other words, we're going to have a damn good look at everything you've been responsible for the last X number of years, matey boy, and change it. And Bert's just standing there going, I'm going to vomit.
It's wonderful. We should be dancing in the streets. They were in every outpost of the BBC on Monday morning this week when Dyke had his first day at work. They were all letting out spontaneous cheers and things. It was like the prisoners being released at the end of Fidelio. They were just dancing around saying, the years of Bert terror are over. We can now say he was a complete twit who brought in all these clipboard consultants or whatever they're called and all these strange Armani-suited chappies who filled up Broadcasting House and kicked all the programme makers out. And it's all over. It's going to be Roland Rat from now on. It's great.
What the audience here might not know is that on the seventh floor of this building, they've discovered an aeroplane being made out of balsa wood.
The six-month period of cohabitation between Greg Dyke and John Burt is already said to be going uneasily. The pair have claimed to have no difficulty, quote, getting into bed together, though Mr. Dyke has stressed that he'll be the one smoking the pipe. Francis, who's finally got Mummy's approval by Royal Charter?
Oh, well, it's been a busy week for the Royals. Shocking week, really. It turned out that Prince Charles's mother is the Queen. Absolutely extraordinary. They were photographed together, and he kissed her hand, and she said, I'm very proud of my son, Charles. They've never been seen together before. She's never mentioned his existence or any connection. It turns out they are mother and son, and she's very proud of him. He didn't say if he was proud of her, but I expect he is. And she has given him, this is one of the advantages of being queen, when your son is getting a bit restless, saying, why don't you abdicate and let me get on with it, have a proper job, you know, I'm unemployed at the age of 50-something, you keep him quiet. But it's a bit like Nell Gwynn, you know, instead of giving the boy a dukedom, you just give him a royal charter, and he's happy for weeks afterwards. I don't know what it means, being given a charter, but it's obviously very good. And no one else can have them except for Prince Charles now. And it's something he'll treasure, I imagine.
Did they speak when they got their heads got close? And I was trying to detect if there was any words passed, like him muttering, you ruined my whole life, you know. Or her saying, one day, son, none of this will be yours.
Yes, the Queen presented Prince Charles with a royal charter for his Prince's Trust charity. It was a moving occasion. A former Borstal boy, this is true, told of his transition from a life of crime to becoming a BBC producer. He said he hadn't committed a crime for years, though he admits he was once tempted to produce Noel's House Party. So, the scores at the end of round two are, excitingly, everybody 8 points. Linda, listen to this. Goodbye, Mr. Chips. Now's the time to depart. Yet if only you could have your way. Goodbye, Mr. Chips by Petula Clark. You never heard that on Capitol Gold, do you? Horrible. Yeah. Linda, which court case failed when a boy was told he'd had his chips?
It's a bit of a sad story, really. It's this little lad who reckons his mum and dad tortured him by giving him chips every day. And he didn't get anything but chips, or sometimes pasty and chips, or jumbo sausage and chips. And he sued them, but I think unsuccessfully, for this chip torment. Fred is looking very confused at this whole story, because this chips, day in, day out, that would be a health farm in Scotland, wouldn't it? Can't see the problem with that at all. Last time I was in Scotland, I went in to buy some food, I got me change in batter. But that's what it is. It's this little lad who was not so little, really, because of the chips.
We don't always eat chips. We leave them overnight to cool down and then have them the next day, and that's a salad.
All correct. Fred, how can you get a bird's eye view of Britain at the click of a mouse?
I hate to sound like I know all, but I know this one as well, because we scoff at things up in Scotland.
No, you just scoff things.
Because this man was on television saying that he's taken pictures all over the United Kingdom, except Wales, Northern Ireland and Scotland, which sounds pretty much like England to me. And it's remarkable, if you've got an internet connection, you can see anything you want, really, right down to a garden chair. You can see garden furniture. So I'm dead keen on this, because I haven't seen my garden furniture since it was nicked. And it's going to cost you £17.50 to get a photograph of your garden seat. Or alternatively, for a pound, you could go out in the back garden and take a picture of your garden seat yourself.
Fred, if you have to pay a pound to go into your garden, I don't think that's your garden.
It's a pound to take the photograph.
Well, who charges you a pound to take a photograph?
I obviously have a stately home somewhere. That you...
Back off, will you? I haven't thought this gag through. Alternatively, for nothing, you could go out in your back garden and take a picture of the seat yourself.
You'd have to pay for the developing, wouldn't you?
That's a pound.
Photographers are producing the first ever complete aerial survey over the UK. Thanks to this technological breakthrough, every single skinhead will be able to go up to anyone, anywhere in Britain and shout, "Oi, I know where you live." At the scores at the end of round three are Jeremy and Linda 12, but thanks to my unique scoring system, Francis and Fred have inched into the lead with 13 points. And before we start the final round, here's a business card found posted through the door of David Ward in Otley.
T. Blair, supplier of organic horse manure and compost. Ideal for feeding and mulching.
Thanks to David for sending that. Jeremy, your piece of music.
Take the ribbon from my hair. Shake it loose and let it fall.
Just imagine that was Anne Widdecombe. Why are scientists excited about the latest hair-raising scheme?
Is this the woman who grew her husband's hair on her arm? Well, I think that's just downright peculiar. What a thing to do. I mean, you know, you might carry a photograph in a wallet or something. You want to grow your husband's hair on your arm for? That's peculiar, right? On her inner forearm. She glanced at it and thought, I don't know, there's something... Oh, something missing on my inner forearm. It's like bareness. I know what I'll do. I'll grow a beard there. So she pulled out some of her husband's hair, got some baby bio and a trowel and stuck it in her arm. And there it grows now. She's got her husband's hair there. So she can run her fingers through it when he's on a business trip. But he'll never get a moment's peace, because she'll be sitting in front of the telly scratching, going, you've got terrible dandruff. He's going, how do you know?
Well, she didn't do it just for erotic purposes. It was also because they're baldness researchers, I think, these people, and they try it, rather than try it on rats, they decide to try it on themselves for Christmas.
Well, it's nice to know these scientists aren't wasting their time trying to find a cure for cancer, isn't it, really? Oh, for goodness sake, slaphead blokes just wear a nice shirt and a lovely smile. No one will notice. Need all this palaver.
The thing is, it's not the actual hair follicles that get transplanted. It's the cell that generates hair growth that goes into the arm, and it can now become from... So do I sound as if I know too much about this?
The thing is, having a lustrous head of hair, unlike Francis and Fred, I have an entirely different problem, because the trouble is, when you're a dad, you think, well, life's not going so badly, the daughter's safe, she's growing up, she's 9 years old, and, you know, she's at primary school, she's doing all right, reasonably happy. And then you think, I'm 38 years old and I've got bleeding nits. And I'll be sitting in a meeting with some arse of a producer from somewhere, and I'll be sitting there scratching, and they'll say, oh, is anything wrong, Jeremy? I'll say, oh, good Lord, no, there's nothing wrong, just head lice. And you can't catch them, they're tiny wee devils. Otherwise, you know, if you could trap them, you could, you know, collect up a lot and throw them over the walls of private schools.
But think how much easier it's going to be to catch the little blighters now they're on your forearm.
I actually think most men don't actually want a wife or girlfriend. They just want a woman's head grafted onto their arm in the crook there, so they can just walk into a pub with this head permanently lodged there. Like a sort of kestrel, you know.
It's important you don't have to buy it a drink.
No, you wouldn't, because it... What? It was grafted to your elbow. It wouldn't have any kidneys. It wouldn't be able to drink. Crisps, maybe.
Jeremy, do you realize
be realistic.
You're pulling Simon up on a technicality. And you're talking about having a woman's head grafted onto your elbow. Like, that's going to happen. No, but it won't have kidneys.
Well, they might, but you'd have to have them in a bag hanging underneath. So they carry your bag over your wrist with all the wrist, with all the internal organs and that.
And you could use those to make gravy, couldn't you?
2 points to Jeremy. Lindo, who might be raising a toast to a reasonably miserable 60 Minutes?
Raising a toast to a miserable 60...
I know one.
Oh, do you? Oh, go on then.
I think the government's going to ban happy hour.
Yes.
Oh, that's it. It's happy hour. Yes, they're going to ban happy hour... Because, well, apparently it causes too... We can't cope with happy hour at all. It causes too much fights and violence, so we're going to have a little mustn't grumble hour where it's... the drinks are full price, but still mustn't grumble. I think, actually, alcohol can prevent a lot of crime. Certainly in my own case, because if it wasn't for the availability of drink, I'm sure I would have killed my entire family several Christmases ago with a £2 tin of Quality Street. So,
well, also, in certain parts of Scandinavia and Iceland, where Simon and I went many years ago, there's no crime at all because they drink this stuff called Black Death. And there's this ritual every evening. They go into the bar, order a quadruple Black Death, swig it down, fall over, and know nothing till the next morning. So, ergo, there's no crime whatever.
Typical New Labour, isn't it? I mean, one minute they're picking on the disabled, and the next minute people who are too pissed to fight back.
Well, that's another thing they're thinking about, is raising the age at which you can buy alcohol to 21. How can you get to the age of 21 without a drink? In this miserable New Labour Britain. Good God, it's not humanly possible.
Linda, 2 points to you. Francis, which very British dish has taken India by storm?
Oh, Michael Portillo, isn't it? It's this wholly invented thing called chicken tikka Portillo, which started in England in sometime in the 1960s when a customer ordered chicken tikka and then said, well, is there no sauce? So they got a tin of cream tomato soup, bunged in a bit of fenugreek, tipped it on and said, that's chicken tikka masala. And it's taken off to such an extent that we're now selling it back to India, unbelievably. I mean, what's the matter with the Indians? It's disgusting stuff.
Those kormas you get in India, they're not curries at all. They shouldn't be on the savoury part of the menu at all, kormas. They're like a meat trifle, aren't they? Should have candles on them, shouldn't they, on its birthday?
glacé cherries. Actually, they do. My little one, they do put things like glacé cherries on. And that awful squirty cream from an aerosol can that dissolves within seconds. They just automatically squirt that on anything like a chicken tikka masala. People still order.
Do they?
Yeah. Francis, they might be winding you up a little bit. It's that bloke from The Guardian. Get out the squirty cream. No, he loves it. He loves it.
You just get chips.
Thank God for proper curry, though, because my introduction to Indian food was my mum's curry, and it is, as Linda says, I mean, it's a revelation when you first have proper Indian food to realise that it is supposed to be savoury, because when my mum made curry when I was a kid, a huge amount of fruit seemed to creep in. Sultanas and bananas and apples and custard on the top. Putting fruit on your dinner is British people's idea of exotic. That's the problem. Whack a pineapple ring on something and you've got Toad in the Hole Hawaiian style.
Hey, your mum doesn't run an Indian restaurant near Francis, does she?
It's called Creamy Sheila's.
Is exporting chicken tikka masala, a dish which doesn't exist in India, to hotels in Bombay in order to satisfy hungry English tourists. And before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Fred?
This is from Catherine Beaton, who lives near Kyle in Wester Ross, and it is about an exchange between a Mull policeman, that's the Isle of Mull, and a lady tourist. The lady tourist was upset by the sight of two dogs engaged in the act of procreation, which is how the Free Presbyterians describe some unpleasantness that goes on. Tourist: officer, can't you stop them? Policeman: well, what do you want me to do? Tourist: I don't know, throw a bucket of water at them, or a biscuit. Policeman: would you stop for a biscuit?
Simon, this is from The Guardian. Ex-Marine Stanley Heiserman, 41, pleaded guilty in Allentown, Pennsylvania, to 6 convenience store robberies, 4 of which he pulled off while naked. Heiserman told police that during a previous stint at robbery, he had been identified by his clothing and was determined not to let that happen again.
Let's look at the final scores. Jeremy and Linda have 16 points. Francis and Fred have a greatly creditable but strangely unfair 17 points. Let me leave you with an item seen by William Wood in the Etchingham Parish magazine.
Please note, we finally found the winner of the Fate Lookalike Fancy Dress Competition. We were looking for someone dressed up as Peggy Hunter, when we should have been looking for Pocahontas.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wheen, Jeremy Hardy, Linda Smith and Fred McCauley. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.